Tweet at TodaySOR.
Lots and lots of reactions still to the protests against the president. One caller says, just filled out my water application after what happened at the weekend. Tom says, I just want to say that real Irish people would defend our president to the death. I'm so ashamed of those thugs. Another caller, no one including the president should be abused, but equally our politicians and media are not representing the citizens of this country who deserve better. The people of Ireland who are paying off bank debts and suffering every day from lack of medical attention to lack of food and heat are not better off than the Greeks. Not so sure that's quite true, but anyway, it's a debate for another day, perhaps. And on Aer Lingus, David, people want choice in the airline market. What's wrong with small? Now, ask any young boy, or indeed many young girls, what they want to be when they grow up, and many will say they dream of being a professional footballer, to be spotted and signed up and to play with the club they've adored since they were first able to play football. The reality, though, of club life for young footballers is a challenging one, with pressure to perform, worries about contract renewal, and many games sat out on the bench. Dr. Tim Prescott has supervised new research into the fate of footballers across a number of English and Scottish clubs, and he joins me on the line from Teesside University in England. Also in studio, I am joined by former Millwall and Republic of Ireland player Richie Sadler, and in our Cork studio, Shane O'Connor, who was signed for Liverpool as a teenager. He also played for Ipswich Town for 3 years before returning home. Good morning to you. First of all, if I can come to you, Dr. Prescott, tell me about this research, because there seems to be a number of stark findings about the psychological impact of being let go as a teenager when your dreams are not actually working out.
Good morning. Yeah, that's right. That's the key finding in our research, that players aged between 15 and 18, after the moment of release, about 55% of our sample were identified to be suffering from clinical levels of psychological distress, problems such as anxiety and depression.
Now, when you say clinical levels of stress or distress, did that mean that would have required an intervention from professionals?
Yeah, that's really what in terms of identifying cases that would require treatment, that's the level, yeah.
And you looked at them, or at least your colleagues looked at them, at three different points in their development. I think it was just before their situation was reviewed, and then twice in the aftermath.
That's right. And the initial measure after 7 days, the levels were actually lower than what they were about 3 weeks later. So that suggests that as time goes on, the distress is increasing.
And how would that manifest itself?
Depression and anxiety were indicated in a lot of those people showing distress. And the other key finding that we had from the released players was that many of them were using what we would call avoidance strategies for coping. And by that, we mean things like really not thinking about what's happened to them, perhaps tending to deny what's happened, and sometimes using drugs and alcohol to escape the reality of the disappointment.
And what about the experience and their development or lack of it further down the road, maybe, you know, 6 months or a year or two after they were let go?
Well, our research hasn't looked as far into the future as that. It would be really interesting to do so. I think we can anticipate, though, that for players that will have been associated with a football club and in their own eyes and in the eyes of everyone that's seen them for many years, these were the children that were going to become professional sportsmen. The task of having to create a new identity and to look at themselves and face everyone they know and admit that they're no longer going to be the professional footballer, that's a huge adjustment task. So we would expect there would be a longer term agenda for them.
Okay, stay with us if you can, Dr. Prescott. I want to go to Shane O'Connor in our Cork studio. Good morning to you, Shane.
Morning, how are you?
Very well, thanks. And thanks for coming on to the programme. Tell me about your own experience. It started off with a great opportunity, or so it would have seemed, going to Liverpool.
Yeah, I was very fortunate actually to get the chance over in Liverpool. It came about as a summer camp opportunity here in Cork, and Jim Waldron, a scout in Dublin at the time, gave me the chance to go over on trial. And I was fortunate enough to get the contract over originally on a scholarship. And I stayed there for 3 years, just, you know, learning my roots of football, getting into the day-to-day business of training every day, basically, you know, turning football into my life. But I suppose it was then when I made the move to Ipswich when I was 19.
No, but before you talk about Ipswich, tell me how the Liverpool thing ended. How did that work out?
Well, I was never going to break into the first team in Liverpool. It was very difficult. There was a lot of players coming. You're fighting, even if you do have your shirt on the back, there's people coming from all over the world every week trying to take your place. I think at the reserves time when I was there, there was 50 players all fighting for 11 places on the team. I think a club of that size is very difficult to break in. So then when I had the chance really to move to Ipswich, you know.
Right, and what was it like for you psychologically seeing those other youngsters coming in from, as you say, all over the world and realising that it was a really competitive situation?
Yeah, it was very surreal. I remember the time I went over, I just signed, I was 16 and I thought I was just going to go over and I was going to be the first team in 6 months playing, you know, as you do. And I just signed playing left midfield and there was lads coming in trying to, you know, take your place, and you're thinking I could be out the door again in a few weeks. It was a big change from playing over in Cork, you know, when you're playing every week, you're a banker to be on the team, and you go from being the best in your team to all of a sudden you're being around players who are better than you and, you know, up to the same level as you.
And did you feel under pressure from the outset?
Looking back now, I didn't realise what I was getting myself in for. At the time, I just thought I was going to go over and everything was going to be very easy for me. Looking back, I probably was a bit naive, but I suppose when you're 16, you're moving away, you're trying to follow your dream. You just believe everything's going to go well for you.
And at what stage did you realise over the 3 years that it wasn't actually going to be the fulfilment of your dreams?
Of playing for Liverpool?
Yeah.
I suppose pretty early on, to be honest with you. There was always players better than me there. I was never really excelling at Liverpool at the time. The only probably place I was playing my football well was actually when I went away with Ireland, you know, the young teams. I never really fulfilled my potential at Liverpool, and I always knew that it was never going to be there where I was going to break through.
And then you moved to Ipswich. I suppose there was maybe a bit of local knowledge involved there. Roy Keane was manager at the time.
Yeah. To be honest, he was really good to me when I was over there. Whether I was homesick once or twice, he rang me and he helped me, you know, get through that time. And when he went to Ipswich, I was fortunate enough just to have his number, and I just asked him, you know, would I be able to have a chance there? And you know, he was very good to me. He gave me the opportunity to go over and trial, and you know, I was lucky enough to get a contract there.
How long did that last?
I was there just under 3 years as well. I left in January. I had 6 months left on my contract.
January of which year?
2012.
Right, so you're 2 years back in Cork now. Did Roy's departure from Ipswich mean that you went on a bit of a downturn as well?
No, I was injured actually when Roy left. I was just after having a really good spell in the team when I got injured. And the new manager came in and He had his own views on the things, and in the summer he brought in his own player in my position, and you know, the player he brought in, to be honest, was much better than me, so I think I was always going to play second fiddle there. But I had an opportunity to move to a couple of teams, but unfortunately it didn't happen. You know, it's down agents and things like that, you know. But to be honest, it changed myself when I left and came back here January 2012, that's when I changed. When I came back here, I think that's when it all changed for me.
Right, and how were you in yourself at that stage? Because I think you tweeted after you were released by Ipswich, sorry to be leaving, but couldn't keep going on this way and not playing football or even being given a chance to play.
Yeah, I found it very difficult from when I was playing every week in the first team to being then be put back, say, training with the kids, with the two or three lads who weren't being involved in match day squads. I found it very difficult to be probably taken out of the spotlight. And you don't get an answer for why you're out. You're just told that then this is the way it is. And I suppose there came a time I had to draw a line under it and just say I can't really go on this way. And then the opportunity came back to play at home. And I think I just jumped at it, really.
Right, but was it difficult for you to make that adjustment and to accept that, look, you know, you weren't going to be running out at Anfield or at Ipswich every other Saturday?
Yeah, very difficult. I mean,
How did people react to you when you came home? Did you have a sense that maybe you had to explain yourself, or that you were that you were a failure or something?
You know, that word would be the word I'd use actually for myself. I mean, failure is the way I'd look at how it panned out for me, because I think I got there and I didn't manage to hold on to it. And I it's more on myself than anyone else. It's easy for people to blame anyone else, but if I had done more, nobody would have been able to stop me.
Right. Now, before I bring in Richie Sadler, I want to go back to you, Tim Prescott, Director of Clinical Psychology at Teesside. Clearly, people like Shane are in the majority as opposed to the minority, because the statistics would suggest that only a small percentage of people make it to the very top. So how are the clubs at preparing youngsters and, you know, helping them to deal with the fact that, look, they're not going to make it?
That's the key question. I think... In many clubs, they do some welfare and education work with players that should, to some extent, prepare them for optional career directions. But I think the key area that's been identified in our research is what happens after release. So there's relatively good care at some clubs while they're still with the clubs, but after release is when the period of vulnerability is really most dangerous. And I think that's where clubs need perhaps to think about developing some additional services to follow people up after their release, so they can be monitored and assessed for their mental health needs, and if required, can be offered some treatment to help them with that adjustment and to rebuild their identity and find some new career direction.
Richie Sadler, thanks again for coming in. Do you identify, or can you identify, with what we've just been hearing, A, about the survey, and secondly, the Shane O'Connor's story, I should say?
Yeah, I don't think anyone who's worked in the area of youth football or who's been involved in it would be surprised with the findings. I know the language used, it's clinical levels of psychological distress, but if you're around players, whether you play alongside players who get released, or you're a parent of a player who get released, or you're a coach or a scout or an agent involved, you do realise how big a blow this is. And you're talking about children here, 15 to 18 year olds, kids. Like, it's a hammer blow for a child to receive news like that, because, like you said, you start out at whatever age, 6, 8, 10, whatever age you form ideas about what you want to be when you're an adult. If your goal is to be a footballer and you end up in England at some point, it's because, like Shane has said there, you've probably been the best player in the playground, in the school, on the school team, in your club, all the way through. And it would be a positive experience all the way through. You're getting positive feedback for everyone. You're getting all the good stuff told to you. And then when you get that blow, and you go, right, that's it.
And of course,
it's not going to happen.
You're living in a village, or you're living on a street or in a district, or playing with a club, and this is seen as big news. You're off. You've made it. You're going cross-channel.
But it is, again, and the word identity was used in the conversation already. I think that's... I know from my own experience, when I left playing football, and I can see this in younger lads who leave as well, you from a very early age, like how your parents, your uncles, your aunts, your teachers, how your friends interact with you is as you're the footballer. It's how you're introduced, it's how you're described, and it's how you see yourself. And then, so it's more to this than simply finding another way to spend your time, or another job, or another way to earn your money. Because when you really buy into the belief that this is the thing you are, and you identify yourself as that more than anything else, and then it goes, that's a lot to deal with.
Right, but what was it like for you? I mean, I think you were 17 or thereabouts when you got the call to go to Millwall.
Yeah, I went over when I was 17, and I finished when I was 24 because of an injury. And so I would have seen a lot of lads, particularly that I was with Belvedere, so...
That's a Dublin club.
Yeah, probably everyone at that level would have wanted to go to England on trial. So of all the people who want to go, a small amount get to go on trial, an even smaller amount get signed up, but a very high amount of the people signed up will get released, because there's only a limited amount of places in any senior squad. And because England is as popular as it is and as wealthy as it is, as has been mentioned already, that the best players from the world are attracted to England. So it's more competitive now for kids than it's ever been. It's more difficult to be an Irish kid now with dreams of getting to England than any previous generation. So this kind of thing is going to feature more and more. So like the doctor said there, I think the focus needs to be on what supports are there and who's going to take responsibility for what, this might sound harsh, is most likely the inevitable end result of an aspiration of being a footballer. A tiny, tiny percentage will get through.
I'm just looking at some statistics. The Times of London did a two-part series on this recently. 96% of scholars signed at 16 will not play again from the age of 18. 98% of players signed as professionals won't play again from the age of 21. 56% of apprentices at football league clubs between 2012 and 2014 failed to win a professional contract. Now, do the kids have any sense, or their parents more importantly, that that's, you know, all the odds are stacked against them?
I think, I remember from my own experience, we were all put in a room and we were told of the percentages. But if you look at any athlete, any sports person, one of the things that they always seem to have in common is they have a single-mindedness. That when others might see no hope of success, they have their eyes on the prize and say, well, I'm going to be the one who's going to make it. And that's why elite sports people are elite sports people. So when you get to a scenario when, because of ability or injury or whatever, you then can't make it, it's very difficult, because even though you're told odds are against it, even though you're told to prepare for other things, and you might be involved in education and welfare programs within the club, you might be from a family that have a prioritised education, you might be from a very supportive, balanced network around you, which not all footballers are, and it's still a hammer blow.
Shane, what was it like for you at Liverpool and Ipswich? I mean, were there supports made available to you? I mean, of a psychological and maybe an educational kind as well.
Yeah, well, we've done the educational package, but I feel people that are coming back from Ireland definitely need more help. I mean, listen to the doctor there. It's probably scary thinking how much I can relate to everything he said. I mean, of going down roads, of trying to shut out. I mean, when people try and talk to me, I just shut out and try and make up some sort of story to make them believe that, oh, I am hanging on to the dream, or this club or that club, and I still can go there. I don't think there's enough done for people that come back psychological-wise. I mean, I think I could have definitely used a bit of help of trying to reintegrate back into normal life, because, I mean, from the age of 16, I'd get up, I'd go training, and I'd come home and I'd wait to go training the next day. That was my life. And that's the bubble you live in over there. But when that bubble bursts, you kind of don't know really where to turn.
Richie, as well as being a writer and an analyst, you're a psychotherapist as well. So do you find yourself helping guys like Shane who have had to adjust to lowered expectations?
Do you know what I find as well? I've spoken to a lot of players who've come back over the years. It's, well, I won't say equally distressing, but it's very distressing for the parents as well. Like, it's a very difficult process to go to, because, again, you're talking about kids. They don't pursue this dream in isolation. They do it with the support of their family, in particular their parents, and sometimes coaches and agents or scouts. So it's a disappointment for a lot of people. And I think where football needs to get to here is, while clubs, and I did it when I worked at Millwall Academy and players were released, you offer help in as best you can. You say that you've contacted other clubs and you'll set them up with trials elsewhere, and you might stay in touch with them, give them free tickets for matches coming up. You can do all of those things, but there reaches a point where, as this research has shown, that a lot of players are dealing with issues which can't be resolved by, chats on the phone with a friend or tickets to a match or an offer of a trial. And I think professional help is needed. So counsellors, psychologists, psychotherapists, there's a role for that expertise in professional sport, particularly in professional football, particularly in this age group, because the vast majority of lads who go down this road will experience rejection, disappointment, failure. Put whatever word you like on it, but they will arrive at a point with their head in their hands going, right, this is a catastrophe. And those lads need help, and they need more than just sympathetic chats by their friends.
And yet we've known, and you go back to the stories of, say, George Best going over, being lonely, being homesick, and then getting the good landlady and Sir Matt and all the rest of it. And that's over 50 years ago. And you would have thought maybe at this stage, Tim Prescott, that the clubs, particularly the bigger ones, would be far more sophisticated in anticipating the troubles that can arise, and maybe would be more selective at the outset.
Yeah, it's difficult, I think, to know what we should expect from the clubs at this stage. I mean, in a sense, I think we have to give them chance to respond. That this research is relatively recent, and so it's new knowledge about some of that reality, and we still need more data to build more certain knowledge about the longer-term picture. But I think it's not surprising that, you know, for clubs, you know, they're investing in people for their own future, and their priority really is for the players that are going to succeed. And I think, you know, what Richie was talking about there were very real. The family investment, the expectations for the players that are released is the area where the clubs have really got to strengthen their provision.
Yeah, and I'll leave the last word to you, Shane. And again, thanks for coming in and telling us about your experience. Just on that point about, and again, I think it's reflected in a text from a guy called Bob, sending children over to England to be sucked into the vicious machine that is professional football, only to be thrown onto the scrap heap of failure before they reach adulthood, is abominable. The parents of these children are also to blame for having had their and their children's heads turned by the promise of fame and fortune. Now, that's probably putting it in an extreme way, because everybody's entitled to their dreams. And you're also supported, I think, as you were as well at Rockmount, by a lot of very sensible, sane and experienced people.
Yeah, definitely. But, I mean, you can't really blame the parents, because if someone at, if Liverpool come knocking on the door of any young child at the age of 16 or whatever club it may be, there's no way they're going to, the child's going to want to turn it down. You've got to take the chance, and if it's your dream, you're going to follow it. It's the same as anybody going through school. If they want to get the points for whatever they want to do, they're going to follow their dream. And, you know, it works out for some people and it doesn't. It's just, I think, the help that for the people it doesn't work out for, it just needs to be there a bit more.
I think the wording of that text is a bit harsh. I would agree. There was nothing my parents or any other adult could have said to me when I was a teenager to stop me getting on the plane.
A very valid and fair point. Look, thank you all for being with us. Richie Sadler, formerly of Millwall and the Republic of Ireland, in studio here in Dublin. Shane O'Connor, former Ipswich Town player and also now involved with Rockmount in Cork and Cove Ramblers as well. And Dr. Tim Prescott, Director of Clinical Psychology at Teesside University. Thank you all for being with us.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.